Chapter 12. Activating the Defense Grid. When confronted with a discrepancy between our narrative and reality, the ego engages any number of defense mechanisms to distort reality. The integrity of our narrative must be preserved. We lie to ourselves so we can live with ourselves. None of us wants to admit that we are selfish or lazy, much less a failure or flawed. We need to get our proverbial story straight. The ego is thus equipped with an elaborate array of shields and buffers, defense mechanisms that allow us to reconcile the story of who we are with our behavior. We distort or delete aspects of our world to mitigate their unpleasurable effects from our conscious awareness. The most common of these is avoidance, denial, or justification. Smoking offers a classic illustration of cognitive dissonance. The smoker may acknowledge that cigarettes cause a wide range of negative health effects, but he probably also desires to be healthy. The tension produced by these inconsistent ideas can be reduced by A. not thinking about it, B. disputing or denying the evidence, C. justifying one's smoking, a bus could come and hit me tomorrow, or I need to smoke, or I'd gain too much weight, or D, accepting the truth and taking steps to quit, even if repeatedly unsuccessfully. Of course, instead of protecting us, rather than the ego protecting itself, the defense mechanisms displayed in options B and C lead to increased instability and insecurity. As these defenses emerge, the chasm between the truth and our ability to accept it is exposed. Have you ever wondered why it is so important for someone to believe something despite obvious evidence that it's untrue? He insists that the dictionary is wrong because the word he wants to spell in Scrabble can't be found in it. And playing Trivial Pursuit is a real treat when he has you half-convinced that there is a misprint on every other card. This person needs to be right for the same reason someone gets angry. He is unable to feel less, to be wrong, and lose power. A bigger ego means more blame and less personal responsibility and accountability. This is why it is so hard for someone with low self-esteem to forgive or apologize. Digging in their psychological heels, the ego tricks them into believing that, by holding on to their anger, they become powerful and less vulnerable. The opposite is true. If a person is unable to let go, or, even worse, seeks revenge, it is a sign of emotional insolvency. Likewise, how quick are they to apologize when they are wrong or hurt others? Are they able to forgive when they have been hurt? Those who can easily move their ego out of the way, who can forgive and apologize when necessary and appropriate, operate with a higher degree of emotional strength. The eminent psychiatrist Thomas Szasz does not mince words when he writes, "Beware of the person who never says, 'I am sorry.' He is weak and frightened and will, sometimes at the slightest provocation, fight with the desperate ferocity of a cornered animal." Through the looking glass. When it comes to our behavior toward others, the ego is equally equipped to exonerate itself from immoral, selfish, or harmful behavior, which includes A, recusal of responsibility, I was following orders, B, subjective contrast, everyone else did X and Y, and I only did X, or devaluing the victim, he's not a good person, or they don't care about people anyway. We constantly make micro-adjustments to our narrative via a fundamental attribution error, also known as correspondence bias or attribution effect. Thus, we are primed to excuse our mistakes or moral lapses by laying blame on the situation or on circumstances beyond our control, while ascribing intent or a personality-based explanation for the same behavior in others. A line from the late comedian George Carlin comes to mind. Have you ever noticed that anybody driving slower than you is an idiot, and anyone going faster than you is a maniac? True enough. When someone cuts us off in traffic, our first thought is often character-based. For example, he's a maniac. He's selfish. Or he's unskilled. Instead of attributing his behavior to a situation. For example, rushing to the hospital or to some other emergency. Conversely, when we cut someone off while driving, we assign a noble motive or credit the situation. For example, let's teach this guy a lesson. His car came out of nowhere. I have an important meeting. Or, with the day I had, I deserve to get home quickly to relax. We believe our actions do not betray anything unseemly about our character. The greater someone's ego, the more difficult it is for him to see beyond himself and his own wants and needs. Empathy requires a shift in perspective, to put yourself in another person's proverbial shoes. If a person is perpetually self-absorbed, focused entirely on his own pain, then his ego locks his perspective into place, and it is impossible for him to get out of his own way and see through another's lens. When he is in a positive state, he may become inquisitive, seemingly compassionate, and interested in the lives of others. But don't be misled. This is only curiosity masquerading as concern. The Broken Mirror. Most people are not easily offended when faced with a truth that they fully acknowledge, and oftentimes we aren't bothered by a blatant, ridiculous, bold-faced lie. It is usually only when presented with a truth that we refuse to accept that we become sensitive or self-conscious. This then leads to fear and the activation of the defense mechanism. Once we have fully accepted something about ourselves or our lives, we no longer need to hide from it. We don't care who knows about it or who finds out, and we don't allow the reality to hold us back. The truth, once embraced, can never be bruised or injured. Yet, a delusion can be shattered by a whisper or a glance. The celebrated psychiatrist Carl Jung writes, "Everything that irritates us about others can lead us to an understanding of ourselves." Many of us are aware that when we are bothered by a fault in others, it is because we share this weakness, at least in some small measure, even if it has never manifested in action. But this does not reveal the entire picture, because a person who, for instance, suffers from alcohol addiction may very well be hypersensitive to this trait in others, but whether they become troubled by it is determined by whether they have acted responsibly. In other words, if they see the addiction in themselves, accept it, and have taken responsible action toward recovery, then when they notice the disease in another person, it provokes understanding and empathy, not disdain. Hitting a nerve. Recall that whenever there is a threat to our emotional selves, the lower our self-esteem in general, and how deeply the truth scores a direct hit on our self-image in particular, the greater our fear. Our defense grid does not often activate in areas that do not directly attack our self-image. For example, if you are a lousy cook and a person speaks disparagingly about your cooking, the impact is negligible when, A, you accept this fact completely, and B, you don't see yourself as a cook, and in fact, may even talk with great pride about how you can't even make toast. However, the closer we get to a person's self-image, the closer we get to the core of their personal narrative. This is who I am. This is when the ego will go into overdrive to protect itself. Take, for example, a professional chef who has low self-esteem. Their entire self-image is on the line with every meal they cook or contest they enter. You can predict the more dominant personality will be loud and controlling, possibly smug and annoying. You know they'll become volatile if things do not go their way. The more passive type will tend to complain, become antagonistic, and appear somewhat dejected. You can also work backward. Seeing a person's response to such a situation will allow you to know more about them. And what about someone who is hypersensitive to any dissent, much less criticism? A person who is easily and often offended and who becomes vehemently defensive when their opinions, attitudes, and beliefs are questioned is exhibiting that they have exceptionally low self-esteem and an ego that is on constant alert. The language of distance and detachment. We needn't wait for a person to lash out to know that we have hit a raw nerve. Speech patterns reveal a person's anxiety at the subconscious level and are identified through distancing language. Suppose that a friend of yours is on a diet, and after a holiday break, he states, Statement A, the holidays really did me in. Statement B, I was not so good over the holidays. Which statement typifies a person who takes responsibility for his diet, himself and his life, and which reveals a victim mentality? Note that in the first statement, the holidays are to blame for his behavior, and in the second, he owns his behavior with I language, as well as by assuming responsibility for his overeating. The wording may vary, but the pattern of acceptance or deflection remains consistent. Now, let's say you probe further as to why he went off his diet. Statement A. You just can't eat well with all the food around. Diets are impossible on holidays. Statement B. I should have brought my own food. I made the mistake of thinking I could have a little bite of everything. When someone offers a second-person account of one's feelings, as in the first statement, rather than a first-person account of the facts, as in the second statement, this indicates that their ego has clearly activated a distancing mechanism to blunt the emotional pain. Take a look at the following pairs of statements, and note which ones indicate repressed anxiety. Statement A. I'm in trouble. Statement B. I got myself into trouble. Statement A. It's what I think about. Statement B. That's where my head goes. Statement A. I think these crazy thoughts sometimes. Statement B. These crazy thoughts randomly pop into my head. And finally, Statement A. I'm having difficulty at home. Statement B. Things at home are uncomfortable. The first statements accept responsibility, while the second statements recuse the speaker of accountability. Further evidence of detachment from responsibility is evident when an individual absorbs himself into a group. A patient, for example, says to the therapist, "You don't care about your patients," rather than, "You don't care about me." The most extreme instance is when the person linguistically deletes both himself and the target of his message. He effectively severs all emotional connection to bring his vulnerability to zero, stating, "Analysts don't care about their patients." Other detachment mechanisms employ intellectualizing and conceptualizing one's feelings. For example, a psychiatrist asks a patient to describe how she felt when her mother abandoned her at a young age. The patient responds, "I was really hurt when my mother left." This appears to be an honest and healthy expression of her feelings. If she were unable to acknowledge the pain, her response would sound more like, "That would be tough for any child. You know, life isn't easy for too many people." Or, "You learn to grow up quick." Detachment is the nuclear option of defense mechanisms for dealing with either suppressed or repressed anxiety. When the pain is too intense, the I leaves to cope with overwhelming emotions. For this reason, people in extreme grief don't use the typical pronouns of self-absorption, I, me, and my. Sadness, even clinical depression, shifts our awareness toward ourselves. Intense grief, on the other hand, is channeled away from the self, requiring an emotional shock absorber. We don't take in the raw emotion. This is akin to the experience of extreme anger, where we avoid personal pronouns, opting instead for seemingly impersonal, distant, or matter-of-fact language. Taking note that we are digging near a raw nerve can help assess another person's fear and insecurities. But knowing in advance which areas are the most sensitive can be invaluable. Although the values that we hold announce to the world what matters to us, we are about to see how the qualitative nature of our values unveils a self-portrait of our deepest selves.